Ion, is John of Patmos trying to tell us something?
No.
Yeah, because he didn't spread it around. It got spread around later by others.
Mm-hmm. But he's telling about the things to come.
But he was keeping it to himself. I think he told me months ago that he just meant it for like 7 people or something.
Well, the 7 churches.
So he was telling them something.
Right. Trying to get them so they didn't get crossed up and what was to slow them down getting back to the east of Eden.
And so the ascended ones of his period would not have engaged in that letter writing.
No. Or read them or had anything to do with them because they wouldn't be so busy pleasing and delighting themselves they wouldn't notice. They'd be in their own cult by then, huh?
And so this guy, John, is creating an issue, a contrast, a whole situation for himself.
He's just trying to lay it out here so that you can get it. If you don't got it, this is so you can get it. But if you got it, then if you have ears to hear, listen. If you don't, then you ain't going to hear it anyway, so it's all good. But the reference here that we want to bring up in the first of it, and unto the angel of the church of Thyatira write, these things saith the Son of God. Now that's different. The Son of God, who hath his eyes likened to a flame of fire, and his feet are like fine brass. The feet of like fine brass references grounding. And the flame of fire, his eyes likened to a flame of fire, that would be, now, we're going to be extreme here, but this is the first point that's made into a place of that your eyes are like laser beams, that you can see more than is obvious, because he's referencing the Son of God. Now, you'd be the Son of God, too, if you're a human creator. And that capital Son would be one that is ascending. So there'll be a point of fire. That's why we did deference with looking in the mirror with the eyes. If you use your eyes like a laser beam and look at your reflection, you may cut your ding-a-ling off if you're not careful. And if you are not grounded, just like an arc welder, it may become an electrifying experience. But that was that point that's trying to make reference. And then it goes on into Jezebel and then whore of Babylon and seducing the folks into these committing fornication and things that you've given away to the idols, don't eat, and all that kind of stuff. That's what that's about. Now, Ed, what questions you got?
It said that the woman Jezebel, which calleth herself a prophetess, so was there a problem with Jezebel, not because of her fornication, but really because she was a prophetess?
Right, exactly. And women prophetess didn't do very well.
As a prophetess, was she in her power? Is that how she could prophesy?
Certainly.
But she could have kept it to herself and enjoyed herself rather than enter the public argument.
Right. Well, who says she didn't?
She
They're
didn't.
Writing about it, but you don't see the book of Jezebel in the Bible.
They quoted her, but she wasn't around to validate it.
Well, yet, she's to come.
And she will show up?
Certainly.
And because she had to tell people something?
Well, she wasn't trying to tell anybody something. She was just having fun. And they use this as a reference that that's inappropriate. And she didn't care or give a rip about what they thought about it. She's busy in her power. And if there was something that was sacrificed to the idols and she wanted to eat it, she didn't have no problem eating it herself. And they're saying, that's bad, bad, it's bad.
Well, is John of Patmos saying it's bad?
Yes, Bob.
What an idiot this guy is, Ed.
It's okay, he can't be so.
Again, he was trying to tell people the 7 churches something. Did he have his act together so that he didn't care whether they got it or not?
Well, he tried to care, but it'll unfold. It's a good story. Okay.
Why does he say, referring to Jezebel, I will kill her children with death?
You can't kill them with anything else, and there is no death, so that's the only threat. Jezebel didn't care. You see? Because they're referencing this as a pagan religious idea. And if you don't see it as a pagan religious idea, then it won't come up. And then you won't have power.
When you say they are referencing, they is John of Patmos?
Yes. Well, John of Patmos is saying Jesus is saying this, but that's not the case. But it keeps on coming down if it gets better. And he shall rule them with a rod of iron, and the vessels of a potter shall be broken to shivers, even as I received of my Father. Now, what that reference is about is that this very letter to the churches, as this reference is done, that the church will be broken up. And he that overcometh and keepeth my words until the end, to him will I give power over the nations. That's not the power you're looking for. That's authority. See how it's very clear how it divides it? Power over the nations. Well, if you've got power, the last place you want to exercise is it over a nation. But if you're talking about authority power, then yeah, you can rule the nation without any power, but they should have said authority.
John does this nonsense about the woman prophetess, but you're saying he's cool on some other points?
Well, he's saying that the church is going to be busted up into little bitty pieces.
Why would that happen?
Well, Bob, it's happening now. The Catholic Church was one...
Yeah, but this is that... So he predicted what would come, but no, that's in the opposite direction. Nothing that comes after him is the direction the writing is pointing to. It's pointing back to Genesis.
Yes, Bob, but the point of the same churches that are busted up then are the same ones that are busted up now. John the Baptist was a Baptist.
Yeah, why?
He was a Catholic.
What is the reason he sees that they will break up?
Because of this point of the differential between authority and power.
He understands the mistake they're making.
Yeah, and then it says, and he shall rule them, and this is, I will give power over the nations, and he says, and he shall rule them with a rod of iron, as the vessels of a potter shall they be broken to shivers, even as I received of my Father. So what he's saying is that if you don't figure out the difference between power and authority, you're going to be busted up into little bitty pieces.
And he's writing this in hiding in a cave.
Right, because the Greeks and everybody's got his own America's Most Wanted, and they want him out.
So he sees what's coming, the mistake they're making. How does that serve him?
Well, it doesn't serve him. That's the whole point. Why he's hiding. He's trying to tell him something, Bob.
Big mistake.
Okay. And then I will give him the morning star. Wouldn't that be the newspaper?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's just that way. Yeah.
It's interesting. That's how Joyce wrote The Wake. He would take scripture like that and put in the meaning that it referred to the newspaper of the 20th century. You know, that was the way he enlarged the implications of the simple text.
Yeah, but they'd have played hell if he says, and I will give him the Washington Post.
He was trying to show it was some newspaper in Europe, but he knew the Nazis were watching, so he just gobbledygooked that. It's just like he was, you're watching a guy write something, and you watch him for years, and he will never actually finish the word, because then you might judge what he's trying to say. And so he's wavering and oscillating with his typewriter all the way through the text. It's funny.
Very good. Now, does that get us down to Sardis? Okay.
Chapter 3. And unto the angel of the church in Sardis write, these things saith he that hath the seven spirits of God, and the seven stars. I know thy works, that thou hast a name that thou livest and art dead. Be watchful and strengthen the things which remain that are ready to die, for I have not found thy works perfect before God. Remember therefore how thou hast received and heard, and hold fast and repent. If therefore thou shalt not watch, I will come on thee as a thief, and thou shalt not know what hour I will come upon thee. Thou hast a few names even in Sardis which have not defiled their garments, and they shall walk with me in white, for they are worthy. He that overcometh, the same shall be clothed in white raiment, and I will not blot out his name out of the book of life, but I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches.
All right, that's the message to Sardis.
And the message is saying that I have not found thy works perfect before God.
That means you can't get it done and you can't get it wrong. Now, here's something very intriguing here. Did you notice? How does it begin? And unto the angel of the church in Sardis write. It converts here. Now the angel speaking. Not before have you heard angels speaking.
So this is an early beginning point. We've arrived somewheres.
The angels are now speaking. And here's something else that you'll jump on, like a chicken on a June bug, is the seven spirits of God and the seven stars.
Would the seven spirits of God be the seven realms of heaven?
Layers, levels, yes. Mm. That's full-blown ascension. And then what he's talking about is you'll depart this ascension, and that's when it's a problem. The angel's saying, you've got it. You've got the seven stars, and you've got the seven spirits of God. I know thy works, that thou hast a name, and that thou livest and art dead. The name, before the name of death was, no one died. You named death, so therefore you are dead.
So be watchful and strengthen the things that remain. What does that refer to strengthen the things
that remain? It says, no, finish it now, that are ready to die. So that means if you want to die, be watchful and strengthen the things which remain that are ready to die. For I have not found thy works perfect before God.
Why are the works not perfect?
Oh, well, that's easy. Complete. You can't get it done. Never get it wrong. But if you've named it as death and you're ready to die, because it's not perfect, then you can die. It's your exit strategy if you choose to engage it. Because remember, the angel's writing the letter to the church of Sardis. Like, you mo-headed sons of bitches, if you want to die, here's how to do it. You question your worthiness, then you're not worthy, and you need to go on and wither up and die. Get out of the way.
Is that the reference in the third verse, then, when it says, I will come upon thee as a thief, and thou shalt not know what hour I will come upon thee?
Yep, because there is no time, so you won't know what hour.
I'm looking at the text on a computer. Are you looking at a computer in the text?
No. We don't like your version.
So you're quoting what you know?
Yeah.
It's in your mind's eye, so to speak.
We can do your version. We don't like it, but we can do it. But see, you get to real King James, and it gets a lot of oohs and ees and ahs and oohs and ahs, and then you really don't know what the hell you're listening to. So This is okay.
But the point is, people might imagine that J.W., disguised as Ion, is looking at the text and reading it.
That would be only those that were engaging Marshall McLuhan would think that, Bob.
True.
Yeah.
The skeptics. Looking for the technique of suspended judgment.
So that cult that won't have a cult, yes. That's right.
Yeah, that's the cult of McLuhan would do that. Yeah. The McLuhanites, not McLuhan, but the McLuhanites would do that.
Yeah. Well, that's okay, because we're not after no cult. So if they're in that cult, they won't be engaged anyway. So it's all right.
yeah, and you just said, which sounded like a tone, that's what those McLuhanites would do, which sounded like a negative tone, but you can't, you saved yourself right now by saying, no, we didn't mean a negative intonation there.
We don't mean negative, but you're just saying if this isn't true and this isn't this and this that. Well, if it's not, then why are you listening to us?
Oh, you're talking to me?
I'm not trying to tell you something.
You're trying to tell me
something. Okay, good. Go ahead.
And to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, these things saith he that is holy, he that is true, he that hath the key of David, he that openeth and no man shutteth and no man openeth. I know thy works. Behold, I have set before thee an open door, and no man can shut it, for thou hast a little strength, and hast kept my word, and hast not denied my name. Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not, but do lie, behold, I will make them to come and worship before thy feet, and to know that I have loved thee. Because thou hast kept the word of my patience, I also will keep thee from the hour of temptation, which shall come upon all the world, to try them that dwell upon the earth. Behold, I come quickly. Hold that fast which thou hast, that no man take thy crown. Him that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go no more out. And I will write upon him the name of my God, and the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem, which cometh down out of heaven from my God. And I will write upon him my new name. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches.
Okay. And
so what is the key of David?
Finally. But don't get too far ahead of yourself now. Yeah. Let's go a little bit before. Here we go. This is a little different. Now, this is to the Church of Philadelphia. And to the angel of the church in Philadelphia, right? Now, wait a minute. Now, the angel isn't writing. They're writing this to the angel of the church in Philadelphia. This is different still. So, apparently, God is giving a message to the angel of the church of Philadelphia and says, write, these things saith he that is holy, he that is true, he that hath the key of David, he that openeth, and no man shutteth, and no man openeth. Now, what this point is about, what we've spoke about this many times, of what's bound on earth is bound in heaven, and what's bound in heaven is also bound on earth. Holy references the place, the differential between power and authority. And truth is individual, meaning what's true for you, Ed, may not be true for Bob. That's okay. But if it is true, then you and you activate or have the key of David. Now, David wasn't a very nice person, obviously, and he'd screw around and have the husbands killed so he could have their wives, a la Bathsheba and that kind of stuff. But it says quickly, or gonna say in Psalms, that David had the heart of God. David had the heart of God. No one up until from this point forward has the actual is after the very heart of God. That's the place of power. That's why it says right after that, he that openeth, no man shutteth, and vice versa. You see, this is that key of the difference between holy authority and power. That's the difference. That's the key. And that if you have that key, you can bind it on earth and bind it in heaven. And that's being rhetorical, but that's the point.
But I don't know if I got what you were talking about. What is the key of David in simple conclusion?
Do you know the difference between power and authority? They call that the key of David.
Oh, David, did he know the difference?
Well, absolutely.
And so it wasn't an issue that he would sacrifice friends for people's wives.
He came into his own power. Even though he did all that stuff, he was still known to be after the very heart of God.
How did they assess that was what he was doing? Who decided he still was after the heart of God?
Well, I guess that'd be the judges of that day. Apparently, they had the ability to know what David knew.
And they decided that David was cool.
Known as one who was after the very heart of God.
And did he fool them?
He didn't fool them, he knew. And when you know,
so,
you don't have to fool.
So he's like Jack Bauer. He could ignore the laws and get the case solved, you know, with very violent methods. He was like that.
But this is pre-law here.
Pre-law, okay, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. And this is David happening, or just referring ahead to David?
It's ahead. It hadn't happened yet. That's what it says.
This is like the effects come before. The key of David is mentioned before David shows up.
Right. It's just to call the key of David. You don't know who David is.
Right.
And it says he, which is not referring to David, because it's capital H-E, if your version is any good, is it? In verse 7, is he capital? H-E capital.
It's lowercase.
Should be.
Whereas a small he in the first verse of chapter 1 was meant to be small. That was accurate.
Right. That's exactly correct. Because, see, the he that openeth and no man shutteth, that's the reference that would help. When David gets around, that'll be the key of David that they're speaking of now. All right, now here we go. In verse, I guess, would be after that, would be, I know thy works. Behold, I have set before thee an open door, and no man can shut it, for thou hast a little strength, and hast kept my word, and hast not denied my name. Now your reference in, from there would be 1 Corinthians 16:9. Then the reference here of an open door, that would be a portal, also referenced as a gate. And that also comes back to the key of David, because now before thee an open door.
This is getting like the Emerald Tablets, talking about parallel world traveling and that, and the key of David. Technically, the word key does refer to a legend used to get back.
Yeah, right.
Therefore, you would use the word, you'd have portals and gates discussed near that phrase.
Yes, and now since it's an open portal, because remember this is in the first book, when everything was open, this was before everything got shut. Now they're back to open again, okay? You're heading toward Genesis.
And when it's open, you still need a key to get back.
Yes.
It's not really easy. You got to be careful still.
Yeah, it can be. Yes, it can be. If you don't make it be all ruling,
right.
It doesn't have to be hard. That's why we've noticed to mention it, because it's just a matter of, like, people see 11:11 and then they see it all over the place. Well, when you see that, that's where your in and out places are. When you get over there and you see 11:11, that's your in and out place. So it ain't no big deal.
It's like Groucho Marx. I would not be a member of any club that would have me as a member. Remember that? Something like that. A joke? Mm-hmm. This is being written for the little men, mm-hmm. the little women, because they're stupid enough to read. They've lost their power. So we have to tell you something, because you're still subject to believing and being told something. This is not for those that are ascended.
Right, of course.
So you would need the key of David. But if you are not ascended and you don't have your power, you will have to heed what we're telling you.
Or not, but see how that works for you. Okay, Ed?
Should we go to verse 10?
All right, because thou hast kept the word of my patience. Kept the word of my patience. And I will also keep thee from the hour of temptation, which shall come into all the world, to try them that dwell upon the earth. That's specifically tactility. Okay, that's tactility. And it also is the duality.
Is the duality the temptation?
No. The hour of temptation is that there's no time. Keep from time, which shall come upon all the world. So time is apparently coming to all the world to try them that dwell upon the earth. So here, verse 10 is telling you plain that humans created time, and to the angel from to Philadelphia, I will keep thee from the hour of temptation. So I'll keep you from time, but you won't have time. But then time which will come unto all the world, and the reason that it's coming is to try them that dwell upon the earth. So what this angel is saying is that we're going to screw with time, and we're going to screw you with time unless you've got the key of David. You've gotten these different points up until now, and since you'll be kept from the hour of temptation, from the hour, then that's what's coming to everybody else that dwells on the earth, that embraces, quote, time.
This is literally the Emerald Tablets. Very close. It's just a replay. And the Emerald Tablets were the first to write these kind of suggestions and advice and predictions. This is a replay of the archetype of the Emerald Tablets.
Wow. And can we, I got a cold.
Yeah. Now, would we see this in Buddhist literature also?
You would. You absolutely would.
And we would see it in the Quran?
Mm-hmm.
All the great religious texts are replays of the Emerald Tablets.
And in Jezebel's coochie?
What about it?
She had a great propensity to vajazzle herself.
That's what's interesting to me, Ed, about this is we're doing the Emerald Tablets here, and we could take any great religious text, and it's to replay over the Emerald Tablets.
Yeah.
That's if you accept Ion's interpretation here.
All right. Well, oh, yeah, that's right. Absolutely. That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. If you can take the Word of God from that you're reading from, that we got it right, but it's the author of the Word of God that got it wrong. If you can take that this was an angel to Philadelphia, that's right, Bob. Now, in verse 11, behold, I come quickly. Hold that fast which thou hast, that no man take thy crown. So apparently, once you make it to the coronation and you've got the key of David and you've gotten rid of time, be careful and don't let somebody try to put cram time down your throat hole so another man can take your crown. That'd be referenced in Philippians 4:5, Philippians 2:25, and then back up through 2:10. In Philippians.
It's almost like if you're an ascended being and you're a master, capital M, man, or W, woman, if you leave a last will and testament, before I disappear, it's like the Leonard Cohen song, before I turn to gold, let me tell my story. The Emerald Tablets was someone on the way being ascended and left a document which the ascended person knew would confuse everybody and actually be a limitation, but he thought he'd give him a hint. It's a suicide note, so to speak. The social suicide note. I ain't going to be around. I'll be enjoying myself, but you won't hear from me. But, by the way, here's how I got there.
Mm-hmm.
Decipher that text. It's you know what I mean? It's a cast-off letter.
Oh, it gets better now, Bob.
Okay,
him
good.
That overcometh, that means him that got all this other stuff up through Philadelphia. Okay? Him that overcometh, will I make a pharmacist in the apothecary of my God. Oh, wait, no, wait. I think it's a pillar in the temple of God. But aren't pharmacists the pillar of society?
Today they are, yeah.
Yeah, pillar. You get it, Ed?
Yeah, pillars.
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
They're just
and
pills.
He shall go no more out. and I will write upon him, what? The name of my God, and the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem. See, so now you're a pillar in the temple of God. Well, the temple of God is you. So you become a main support structure in your temple. That you will no longer go out. You won't go out of your power. And then he'll give you a new name. And you'll give you a new name. And your new name will be the name of God. And the name of the city of God, which is New Jerusalem. Where does this come from, Ed? It comes down from heaven, from my God. Now, that reference would be 1 Kings 7:21 and also 14, verse 1. And Hebrews, Bob, you'll love this one, 12:22 and Hebrews 22, verse 4.
What is the significance of a new Jerusalem?
Very good. Everybody talks about the New Age movement. Well, here you go in the first book of the Bible, they start talking about the New Age. That's sort of old school, don't you think? They never reference the old Jerusalem. But they start right out of the chute talking about the new Jerusalem, and there ain't even a Jerusalem. There wasn't even a Jerusalem then. That's another point of proof, Bob. Where was Jerusalem for the new Jerusalem?
Well, yeah, if you believe in your sense of direction of Daniel, Charlie. Who is this guy we're talking about? Johnny. Yeah, when Johnny writes this, that he hadn't heard of Jerusalem or anything, or never existed. The effect of hearing you analyze the sacred literature kind of makes it seem a bunch of Kleenex. So therefore, it empowers us. It gets us re-detached from it. It makes us hear this bizarre, unique interpretation, which it could empower us if we take it seriously, and it does. You're killing the Bible by doing
this. No, we're not. No. Oh, no. Not at all, Bob. Not at all. What it does is it allows you for the very first time of one coming into your place of power to get what it is that's actually being conveyed.
That's what I was saying. You're revealing what the Bible is saying, and therefore once we get it, it's no longer a conundrum. I don't have to read it again. I got it.
Then you don't have to think about it because you know.
Yeah, and that's the empowering thing. That's what I mean by killing it. It does not hold you in confusion, or you wonder, well, maybe there's something in there, or that I never got it, or I think it's this. It's about whatever Christians say today it's about. And you say, nah, that doesn't make it. That's probably not what it's about. So you clear it up, complete it, and then you move into a new zone, which is like post-after the Gulf empties.
That's exactly right. And that'll be the proof when you know it. And you won't have to prove that to any other human creator, because once you know it, then you'll know it.
That's why I call you the Howard Cosell of the emptying of the Guff, is that you're coming into
Howard
the...
Howard Cosell. Yeah, that's
right. Right. You're clarifying these lingering memes, lingering artifacts that have such a hypnotic, in some ways useful, but in other ways a huge disservice on people. And
right.
you're clarifying it and making it visible, and when it's totally visible, it no longer hypnotizes. I got the train to my side. I can't respond.
Wow. It seems like it's running through the middle of the house tonight, doesn't it?
Yeah. Extra haunting sound.
How did that happen? Did the tracks move?
They do. Yes, JW has great ease with moving it further and closer and closer and further.
Isn't that sort of being drawn out?
Yes, and close, close, close.
That is odd.
And it's getting closer. Oh, a train went through the middle of the house, in and out of the middle of the house. A train went through the middle of the house. Oh, wait, there we go. Because it's very odd, because it's a long, long, long way away, but apparently it's just flowing fluidly.
the beep was drawn out very seductively or very...
As you whistle, Bob.
The whistle?
The whistle, you know.
What is it? Very...
Howard Cosell, the whistle blows, and then Howard Cosell gives the blow by blow.
Oh, okay.
The whistle.
But... How could that happen?
We just love playing with you. Did you hear the whistle? You didn't hear it? Okay, here, one more time. Now, how can I know that whistle really blew? Is that J.W. just making up the whistle? Is he just permeating this by confounding us? Because you can't know nothing, and you can't know nothing, you can't get nowhere. And because Marshall McLuhan lived, we'll know now that the whistle cannot blow. And there's two conversations, so the whistle really isn't blowing, and we're really not hearing it. So therefore, what are you trying to say? Right.
It sounds like it's like some guy in a studio is wavering it with the studio button.
Yeah,
you know,
dragging it out. Like, what is it you do? Reverberating it? It's the reverberation on a on your. Who is that person that you like to hear play? Well, they don't. We don't call it playing the guitar, but.
You mean Zappa?
Yeah,
Zappa.
Zippity, yeah.
Zippity-doo.
With a side of B-fart, that's right.
I don't think I've heard the Train Whistle. I've heard it many times through these recordings, you know, through taping, engaging you. That was a bit different, wasn't it?
It was, indeed.
Wow, they were announcing the revelation of the Bible.
Yeah.
Or this part of the Bible.
Of course. Let him who have ears to hear, Bob.
And so it went through. It never has a long gap and then happened again.
Exactly.
Which is what we experienced.
Exactly.
That was
the first time.
Yeah, that was J.W. altering it. Was that J.W. or Ion?
We don't create. We wouldn't care or even bring it to the point because, you know, you think we're trying to tell you something, right?
That whistle was trying to tell us something.
That's it.
There it is again.
I think it's backing up now because it has to be 100 miles away as fast as it's been going. So there must be a string of them just back to back to back, or they've stopped and they're just re-blowing. Uh-oh, is it time again? Uh-oh, is it repeating time? Up. Has J.W. bilocated to another point of the tracks? Is this the proof? Is this the validation that the bilocation is appropriately, ostensibly in your reality that's recorded in the digital Android meme of the archetype that is our knowing and being that we can't know or be? Or some variation thereof.
It's like... Ion is the voice of the Emerald Tablets in the Bible that showed up to do a final mocking Manippean satire of everybody.
Oh, you so fatic. thrill. Or no, in the truest form of it. Well, that's what your wife said.
Dave always used that line. Did you know that? Did Dave said that line?
Yes, Bob.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yes, somehow,
in the floating
realm of the ethers, that knowing came into our proximity of a propensity of knowing it. No, maybe we don't know it. Maybe we just think it. Maybe that's it. That's right. We can't know nothing. We can only think. That's right. And we do this comically and fun, so you can see how silly it sounds when you get the idea that we're talking about, I think, I know. Well, once you know, then you don't have to think anymore. And once you get it, then you got it. And once you got it, then you no longer have to look for it. Looking for a city. You don't got it. If you get there and you know where you are with triangulation, you don't have to look anymore. It's like your car keys. When you find them, you stop looking. You have them. Well, I think my keys are with me.
The key of David.
Oh, hell, where are my keys? Wait, oh, my key, yeah. No, I have my keys. I know I have my keys. Oh, okay, good. Then we got it. Oh, well, let's look one more time and make sure we have them. You see, that's what happens, you see. So that's the comic relief of your duality. which we don't have a problem with, but don't get hung up on it. Move on. You know, get on with it. It makes it easier. Okay. Now, the next church ought to be great fun. Those Laodiceans.
And unto the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write, These things saith the Amen, the faithful and the true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would thou wert cold or hot. So then, because thou art lukewarm, and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. Because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with goods, and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable, and poor and blind and naked, I counsel thee to buy of me gold tried in the fire, that thou mayest be rich, and white raiment that thou mayest be clothed, and that the shame of thy nakedness do not appear, and anoint thine eyes with eye salve, that thou mayest see. As many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. Be zealous, therefore, and repent. Behold, I stand at the door, and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come in to him, and will sup with him, and he with me. To him that overcometh will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame, and am set down with my Father in his throne. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches.
Unto the angel of the church of Laodicea write, these things saith the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. Bob, the beginning of the creation of God.
That's where we're at right now.
That's where the beginning of the creation of God. Now, Bob, these aren't our words. These are Johnny's words.
Yeah.
Okay? The beginning. And that's reference. Future is in Colossians chapter 1, verse 15.
This is the beginning of the creation of us?
Of God, yes.
Of the human. So we've been going through a phase before that.
Well, he's got an order. This is the message to the Laodiceans.
Oh, he's just saying, well, we're going to help make you gods. It doesn't mean in the evolution of creation.
It does. It's the beginning of the creation of God. In the beginning was God. Okay, that's what they say at the end, which is in Genesis. Well, here it is in the beginning, saying this is the first story of the creation of God. And here we go. Here we go. It deals with duality, Bob. When you become the creation of God, I know your works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would thou wert cold or hot. I wish you was one way or the other. I wish you was cold or I wish you was hot, one way or the other. So then, because thou art lukewarm, tepid, barely warm, and neither cold nor hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. But once you come into your power, you're either hot or you're cold. You're not lukewarm. You will vomit when you start crossing the streams, when you start crossing your place of power. You will vomit.
So that may be the biblical level of McLuhan's writings, because he said there was two media, a hot or a cold.
No. What McLuhan said was, if it's a hot or a cold, okay, fine. But this lukewarm running down the middle of the straddling the fence doesn't get you anywhere. That's what he said. That there's hot,
no, that's right.
And there's
I'm just
cold,
saying
that's fine.
I'm saying he used the categories hot and cold. Mm-hmm. He used to say that was from radio technical talk. But that would be the pagan secular world. His Catholic Christian world would be citing that part of the Bible.
And then in the political realm, some say they're from the left or the right kind of thing. Now, but now you've got to get it qualified here. The qualification here is not the deference The issue is that you can't have it both ways. It's one way or the other. Now, that's still duality, but one is included and one is eliminated. That's the point, and that's the clearing up. And you kept asking, well, how do you get there? Once you get to this place where once you got it and you're the beginning of the creation of God, there's no more middle of the damn road. You're either on or you're off. You're either hot or you're cold. You're either up or you're down, one way or the other. And if you're going to run down the middle and constantly undo the things that you're getting, then you finally will just continually vomit yourself from your place of power that you've just achieved in the beginning of the creation of God.
Are you saying that in the duality of the hot and cold, you have to take one side or the other?
No, but you can't be lukewarm.
You have to be on both sides.
At least. At least. But not together, not mixed. Not tepid, not barely warm. Either be cold, be good at it. Either be hot, be good at it. Or you can have hot and cold, but not at the same time.
Yeah, I think McLuhan, when referring to the hot and cold or any opposites like that, they were complementary but incompatible. It's something like that.
That's right, because you have neither hot nor cold when it's lukewarm. So you eliminate both when you do that. But now that's only if you're interested in this ascension process of being God.
Yeah.
Now, if you're not interested in that, then yeah, just keep tearing it up on the weekend. It'll serve you well. No problem. Okay? Now, because thou sayest, and get this now, I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing and knowest not. Now, we've dealt with this. Knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. See, knowest not. It didn't say thinketh not. It said knowest not. And that reference that you get all back through there would be in Hosea. We just love Hosea. Remember Gomer, and if you'll take the harlot back as your wife, I'll take Israel back as my people. Hosea 12:8. And then you got Zechariah 11:5, and then it gives another reference all the way up into Matthew 5:3. That'd bring you up close to the Sermon on the Mount. Okay, now here we go. I counsel thee to buy of me gold tried in the fire, that thou mayest be rich, and white raiment, that thou may be clothed, and that the shame of thy nakedness do not appear, and anoint thine eyes with eye salve, that thou mayest see. Remember we talked about the eyeballs before? Well, now it's saying that once you get in this place of creation, that you should anoint your eyes with eye salve so you can see. Not that you saw, but apparently, in this point of creation, once you get all this stuff worked out, then you find out you was blind all along because of them lying eyes that you'd been nursing and mollycoddling all through this process, and that you was running around naked buying haute couture designer clothes when you didn't realize that that didn't have anything to do with anything anyway. And then there was no shame of your nakedness, and it didn't appear. That's where the cares of life start growing strangely, strangely dim. Good. And it cleans up all that I'm not worthy and incredulity in your place of power. It settles it. And you don't have to prove it to anybody else. And if you don't give a crap if anybody else knows it or not. But if you're still blind and can't see, it's telling you, get you some eye salve. Spit in the dirt, make an eye salve out of the spittle, and smear it on your eyes so that you can see. Any more questions? We were kind of rambling there, weren't we? Okay. All right. You want some more?
Yes.
Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and would like to join my cult and open the door, I will come in to him. Uh-oh. I will come and take over his body and run him crazy with McLuhan-esque terms of incredulity. And I will sup with him and he with me. Now hear that now? actually, we might have added a little bit there. Let me speak here again. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. That's what non-physical does. Non-physical stands at the door and knocks. If any man hear my voice, the voice of non-physical, open the door, I will come in to him. Now, he's given a reference of like coming into your house, but then they make reference of the temple as you begin this beginning creation place of being called God. Then that non-physical comes into him physically. He's already in him, but see, this is the first book. They're still trying to get you in the notion that this is the way it can go. And will sup with him. Now, it doesn't mean eat supper. That means provide supplication with him and he with me. This is the first time that you've had an integral reference of what the point is of coming into your power, that the human creator interacts with non-physical and non-physical interacts with the human. Now, Bob, are you saying that we're saying that once that engagement takes place, that non-physical then can create?
Yeah.
Well, we are too.
Yep.
When the metamorphic experience starts taking place and it becomes a homogeneous environment, that the physical and non-physical, that doesn't offend the labyrinth of your mind, and you come into your place of power, that's exactly what it is. And when that comes in, then you won't be able to tell the difference between physical and non-physical. They'll be one. Well, they really already are, but you'll acknowledge them as one. Once you get these little wordy words down, just settle it and get one way or the other. Either way, it doesn't make any difference to us, but not middle of the ground. One way or the other. Because if you straddle a fence long enough, you will find yourself testicularly challenged sooner or later. Okay? And to him that overcometh, is that like overlayeth, or is that a multi-comer, or an extreme comer? Maybe that's it. To him that overcometh will I grant to sit with me in my what? Throne. That has to do with a coronation, don't you guess? Even as I also overcame, past tense, and am set down with my Father in his throne. That reference is thorough in Matthew 19:28.